I'm so excited about this podcast. We are talking about children through an organization called Mending Kids. It's here in the States. It's in Los Angeles. It's international. And you're going to love hearing about the good works that they do in the medical community to, quote, mend kids, right? Oh, yeah. Welcome to my guest. Thanks for coming on the podcast. All right, first off, I want to know, what is Mending Kids? And doctor, it's all about the medical community. I'll start with you.
Sure. I'm Dr. Andre Panosian. I'm a plastic surgeon practicing here in Los Angeles. And I've been with Mending Kids since its inception, really. And that was somewhere around 2006. And at the time, the model was to bring kids to the United States with some really complex medical problems. And we would do reconstructive surgery on these kids. But it was a very expensive venture back in those days, and a lot of these kids needed long-term stays in the hospital. So as the organization evolved, they realized that, okay, we can actually send people out and actually do more good.
And travel all over the world.
And the nice thing is that any kid who cannot be done on those away missions, we can always keep tabs on them and have them come in when the specialty permits it or the situation permits it.
And you bring kids here to this country as well?
Yes.
You treat kids here in this country? All right. When you're married, you can't do something like that alone. So we'll bring in your wife too, right? You're kind of an equal partner here.
Yeah. I'm the behind the scenes. I'm the fan club, right? No. Yeah, I'm Jill Simonian. I am married to Andre, as I like, well, I'll call you doctor here in
we'll
the presence
doctor.
Of this company. Doctor, yes. And ever since I've known him, he's been involved with Mending Kids, volunteering surgeries. We've been married for 10 years, and I went on my very first mission with him, with our two daughters, who are little girls, ages 9 and 7 and a half. We went to Armenia this past June, and it was, every time I do this, have you noticed, I get like emotional because I think of the parents and the kids who were lined up in that hospital in Yerevan, and I think of them waiting and waiting and waiting, and it's hot and it's sweaty and it's and they're waiting for this doctor from the States to see if he can help them with the situation that they can't get taken care of there in their own country. So we went
Powerful.
On that mission in
Powerful.
June.
Yeah. All right, so my next guest is Isabel, and Isabel, you run this whole thing.
Yes. So I actually started off as a volunteer back in 2011, and by hook and by crook, over
really?
40 missions.
You're a volunteer?
Not anymore. Now I'm actually.
Yeah.
You were
a volunteer.
I was a volunteer. Yeah. I started off as a non-medical volunteer traveling with a mission to China, to an orphanage in China, and the surgeon invited me to document the mission. And by the end of the mission, I was running the autoclave in Mandarin, but I was completely hooked and overwhelmed, and my life changed from that point on. And then I just needed to volunteer more. And then I got employed by Mending Kids.
Someone's got to run it,
and
right?
No, not to run it, but through different roles from.
No, you run it.
Well, what's your title?
Executive director.
Exactly my point.
Okay.
So Isabel Fox, executive director.
Correct.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Very good. And then we also have with us Stephanie.
Hi.
First and last name?
Stephanie Jacinto.
How old are you?
I'm 21 years old.
And what's your story with Mending Kids?
Well, my story started, I guess I've been looking for surgeries. I mean, to do my rhinoplasty and my septoplasty since, I want to say, maybe like a year ago, 2 years ago. I suffer with a sinus problem, and I also had a bump on my nose. So I thought about it. I was like, if I want to do my sinus, I knew that I looked at so many YouTube videos. I did my whole information before I decided to do it. I looked and I saw that I was going to have a cast, and I was like, well, if I want to do that, let me talk to my doctor. I personally talked to my doctor. She said, well, you only qualify for your sinus, not your cosmetic part, which will be removing the hump. So she said she sent me to Los Angeles Cosmetic Center. I think that's where I was sent to. The doctor that was there was not that very helpful. But that's when I found Mending Kids through the news, 34, a Hispanic news. It's called New Vision 34, and they were promoting it, and I just called them, and then I ended up.
That simple.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I called them. They ended up, they're like, send pictures of your nose, and like, they asked for a lot of information, like my background status, where, like how old I am, like school-wise and a lot. And then I qualified. She called me. I forgot the girl's name, but she called me and she's like, you actually qualified. And I was really happy that day.
So you became a patient of Mending Kids.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the bump you described, was that visible?
Yes, it was. It was like, I wouldn't say like my nose, what it was droopy. Yeah.
Well, you look beautiful.
Thank you.
So doctor, can you tell me more about what we did here with Stephanie?
Well, it was a different doctor from Mending Kids did her surgeries, but what we do is essentially do outpatient surgeries in what's called the hometown mission, and that's where we address the concerns of our local population of patients who simply don't have the means or to pay for surgery or the proper insurance plans to help cover these types of quote-unquote elective surgeries.
Let me ask you, have you always done the hometown surgeries? Because I know you more to be international.
For the last 7 years. So we've helped about 100 children, over 100 children, over our hometown missions program, which I believe, started in 2013.
Mm-hmm. And are all the doctors volunteer?
Everybody volunteers.
Yep.
And how does this all get paid for?
Well, through fundraisers.
Jill, take the mic on this one.
Fundraisers that are sometimes chaired by, committees that Jill belongs to.
No, I was not chairman.
Yeah,
that
I
was
know,
a,
but I'm
that
working
was a
on that.
First
I'm working
time
on that.
Thing last year. I hope we're on a gala.
You're committed to the gala.
No, it is. It's fundraising.
Yes, it's fundraising. Okay.
Donor dollars.
Foundation grants, moderate grants. We don't work with government grants, but, we hook and by crook. We have a lot of support from the pharmaceutical companies. So we get a lot of our medical supplies, which sort of helps us not have to pay cash for them. So we get medical supply grants.
Well, let me tell you my introduction to Mending Kids. Obviously, it was with my former colleague, Dorothy Lucy, my girlfriend, Dorothy Lucy. And I would hear her talk about these missions where it was going to help children. And she'd go on these missions overseas. And I was just so moved by this effort. My parents were in the Peace Corps, so I know the concept of going to foreign lands to help other people in need. Talk about the different countries you've all gone to with Mending Kids.
So we've gone, we've gone to China to operate on orphans so that they could become adoptable. We've gone to Ethiopia to operate on children who didn't have access to a specialized cardiac care. We're in Tanzania. Three different missions go to Tanzania, cardiac, colorectal, ear, nose, and throat. We go to Armenia for complex facial paralysis procedures. We've been to Mozambique for catastrophic burns. We go to Peru for trauma. We go to Honduras for orthopedic. And we do Los Angeles, too.
So, doctor, when you go, how many doctors go with you? Because I remember seeing Dorothy's pictures, and it's like an entourage goes, volunteers and medical personnel.
Sure. So one of the nicest things about Mending Kids is that you can actually have that flexibility. If, for example, a certain group of dates works best for me as the doctor or the lead of the mission, then I can say, okay, well, let me get my team around that date because this is the time I can go, as opposed to some other organizations might have, okay, we need two doctors for this grouping of dates and this is how we need it, and you can't go outside those dates. So there's a lot of flexibility that's really important for us as doctors to be able to give ourselves to these missions.
So it's here's when I can go and here's the team I'm bringing.
Yeah, and so you could be a small mission, so it could be myself and maybe one other person, or it could be myself and 10 other people. And it just really depends on what the goals of that mission are and what the infrastructure is like where we're going. Do they have someone to assist you in the OR? Do they have anesthesia that is really reliable and safe?
Because you meet up with their hospitals there.
Yes,
and
exactly.
And their personnel there.
And you really want a partnership with these hospitals because it's a continuity of care issue. So in other words, when I go there, I'm meeting patients for the first time. When I leave, I need to make sure that the doctors there are following up on them as though I've never left. Mm-hmm. And so that's a really important feature. And with the social media the way it is and the internet and connecting across continents, we're able to keep in touch about certain patients, problems that arise, what to do. We have real-time video in surgery. Okay, you want to cut here, you want to stitch that, and you go forward that way.
And so
it's really cool.
I have to jump in and say this because I'm, quote, the wife. And I said I was the fan club before, so I have to live up to it. now. But he started the Armenian mission all by himself, like as a solo, like he had been working with mending kids for years and years and said, you know, there is a need in Armenia for doing some of these complex cases because they don't have the capability to do it there. They don't have the instruments. They don't have the training. They don't have a lot of things. And so, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, please. Yeah. But from my memory, I remember he approached Mending Kids and said, hey, have you ever thought about going to Armenia? And that's how the whole thing started a few years ago. And now, like he said, you know, he meets up with the doctors there and it's sort of become like a yearly, what do you call it? Like a team.
Well,
it's
a sojourn. Yeah.
Well, our commitment at Mending Kids, or at least the, is that when we do find a program that we see where we have like Dr. Kapanosyan and he's established a relationship, we try to commit to go for at least 5 years for what he's said, to build up trust with the local community, with the doctors. We're not a one-off system. When we, you know, for the most part, we've been going to places 5-6 years now, like Tanzania, Armenia. We're on our we'll be on our third year, at least officially. You know, so it's
how long do you go for?
We go for a week, so a surgical week. That's a Monday through Fridays of surgeries. So whatever time it takes to travel there, whatever time it takes to arrive there, and review all the cases and see the patients. He doesn't come in and operate blind. He will have received files before he even travels to know what cases we're going to be undertaking so that we can plan to support him with the sutures he might need or the specialized equipment he's going to need. And then Monday through Friday they operate. Saturday they round. They do the post-op care plan for the patients. And then they either stay a day or two to go see the sites or they go home.
And Jill, paint a picture for me of what it must be like for these families that you saw in Armenia, for example.
Right. So two words come to mind immediately. The first one is, first and foremost, gratitude. I have never seen, and this was the first time I had ever been on a trip like this, but I had never seen such sincere gratitude from parents. I mean, they're standing in the halls of these hospitals, and they're holding their, you know, 2-year-old and their 3-year-old, and the kids are crying and the kids are scared. And even though, I mean, you know, he's Dr. Andre to us, but this is, you got to think about it from their point of view. This is a stranger coming from America. Their precious, most important baby is in their arms with a condition or situation that they have not been able to find help for. And so they're waiting and waiting and waiting. And then and I was in that clinic room when he was, you know, we had the team of volunteers and I had my daughters with me and you know, the different doctors were also there and the parents are bringing in their kids to be examined by him. And their parents, so A, they were very, very thankful, but then also a mom myself, I was looking at them and I could also sense that uncertainty and fear, not in a bad way.
I would think so.
I don't say that in a bad way, but
yeah, like you said, a stranger.
Yeah, it's a stranger. And then, as you know, he's examining the kids, he's sort of developed a rapport, and you know, I imagine that this happens at every single mission and this is pretty typical, but you see the parents loosen up, you kind of you see the kids loosen
up, the trust
up.
Develops
the trust develops and it's something really for lack of a better word, magical that happens. It's really, really moving. And I sat there and watched, and that day afterwards, I told him, don't ever, 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 ever let me complain about anything stupid again. And he laughed at me. He goes, oh, I'm holding you to that. I go, no, you have to hold me to that.
I mean, some people save for months. They save for months for, you know, the bus fare to get to the city. Some people were so poor, they had to sleep at the hospital with their child because they couldn't afford a hotel. So it's the journey that all these parents go and endure to get to us on the chance, because it's not a guarantee that just because they show up, they're going to be selected for surgery, right? Ultimately, it's up to Dr. Panosyan and his team to decide who's the best candidate for surgery.
And how many kids on a mission can you
treat? It really depends on the style of the mission. So, and what skills we're bringing forward. And I think Isabel mentioned before that we don't want to sit there and sort of do the things that they already know how to do. We want to bring in things that the skills that they have never seen, but they have a need for. And so by way of that, process, we can train their own staff, their own physicians on how to manage these problems when we're gone. And that's really the sort of the holy grail of mission work, is to pass on knowledge. It's not being the hero and coming in and feeling good right. about yourself. So for what I do, I do roughly around 15 to 20 treat 15 to 20 children in 1 week. Mm. And these include things that are somewhat complex, things like facial reanimation surgery for kids who have paralysis from, let's say, a brain tumor that was removed and knocked out their facial nerve, or something called avascular anomalies, or big hemangiomas. These are words that probably parents out there know.
Went over my head there. I'm taking your word for it.
But the ones who have kids who have these problems, they know exactly what I'm talking about. But,
well, let's bring Stephanie back in. So, Stephanie, you've been part of the Hometown Mission. You're 20 years old?
I just turned 21 a month ago.
21. Wow. Yeah. Congratulations. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Okay. So what do you make of all this as a patient yourself here in town? What do you make of all this when you hear of the work that they do?
It's very wonderful. Like, I really, like, I appreciate it, like, a lot that they helped me out. It was like the cost. For, I went to, like, five different doctors. The costs were, it ranged a lot. But
like
I,
what?
I think the cheapest was from $5,000 to, I believe, $10,000, and there was a lot of prices, but...
And so what did it cost you to have your procedure?
It was free.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. And how are you feeling after it?
I'm feeling good. I actually can breathe better. I got sick, actually, like 2 weeks ago, and usually when I get sick, I mean, obviously your nose, like, clogs up. It was, I mean, it clogged up, but, like, after 3 days, I was feeling better, much better. I was breathing. Usually, I would wake up with one of my side nostrils, like, closed, even if I wasn't sick. If one of them was closed, and then I would just have to, like, wait an hour or two after waking up, and it would get unclogged. It was a very
big... So the
big
sinus surgery you had made a difference.
Yeah, it really made a difference.
Wow. So from the moment you applied, how long did it take for it to actually kick in for the surgery?
I think it was a, well, like I said, I went through a whole revision. Like, I sent pictures. It was, like, up to date. Like, I kept talking to the, I believe it was an intern that I was talking to. She sent me, can you send pictures? She sent me papers to sign, tell my parents about it. But I did most of the work because, like, I told them, like, I'm kind of not a minor anymore, so I can do the paperwork. So I was doing it all. Then I just told my parents about it when I qualified, and they were happy about it. They just didn't know what I was getting into.
Right.
But I had to explain everything. I showed them the Instagram page, and I did see Dr. Andre on the page, and I asked about him. But I know his. I think your office is in Pasadena.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I did my whole research. I literally went and I dug up everything that I wanted to know about it, just to know what I was getting into.
It was about a 3-month process.
Yeah.
I think about, you know, because you have to review the patients, review the cases. Mm-hmm.
Isabel, I got to think you have more requests than you can handle. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, right now we have, we're at a good balance. One of the challenges from the Hometown Mission has been that some kids, like for a child who has a hairy nevus, which is sort of a large birthmark on their face, sometimes that takes 2, maybe 3 procedures. And with the Hometown Mission, because it's an annual mission, we had a child start with us at 7 and then at 10 finally have the procedure completely finalized. So he was still living with the condition technically for 3 years. And so after a lot of soul searching and discussions, we started a new program called Mend US, where we're trying to place children who we don't catch at the Hometown Mission, we're placing them throughout the year. So they don't have to wait a whole year to get a procedure, or if they need a second procedure, that we can accelerate the process so that a 6-year-old doesn't have to wait 3 or 4 years for that.
Sounds like you're growing.
We're growing. We're in ways I think that are manageable. And we just did our first Mend US patient after Hometown who couldn't go to Hometown, and we have another one in queue right now to get a procedure in the next few weeks.
How did mending kids start? And any one of you can take this.
Oh boy, I think you probably have this story better than I do.
Yes. So I don't know. I can't remember the exact number of years ago, but it was one mom who lost whose adopted daughter died on what $5 of medicine could have saved her at the appropriate time, and she became committed and impassioned to help underserved kids get cardiac surgery, and she would basically go sit in hospitals and wait for a surgeon to go by and then grab them and lobby that they would save one child at a time. And I think she started bringing kids in from Ecuador. And then eventually she got some rich donors to support the organization.
One person came up with this idea.
Yes, it was one mother's
Her name?
Grief. Sorry, of course, Chris Embleton.
Yeah.
And so she started the organization. At the time, it was called Healing the Children. And then about 15 years ago, it became Mending Kids.
So, Doctor, let me ask you, because I know there are other international organizations of doctors that do medical work. What is the difference with Mending Kids?
I think Mending Kids is a little more nimble, I think.
Meaning?
In terms of their models for delivering care to different parts of the world. So I've been through a lot of different organizations, and they're very rigid. Rigidity in that setting is not a bad thing. I think there's a model, and they just essentially it works for them, and that's what they do. However, sometimes when you're trying to evolve and reach a broader audience or a broader patient population, you got to be a little bit more flexible with that. You got to be able to send a small group of doctors versus a big group, or sometimes a giant group versus a small one solo mission or anything like that. But it lets us deliver that knowledge to the doctors there. It lets us deliver that complex level of care. And that's the real thing. We're not going out there simply to correct cleft lips, although we can do those. It's real because they most places in the world nowadays can repair a cleft lip, and they do a wonderful job. And so we go in there with a different skill set, and that's really where this organization shines.
And I'll ask you, Isabella, are the doctors only from Los Angeles? Is this an LA group?
No. I'm traveling to Tanzania in November with a team from the Colorectal Center of Cincinnati Children's Hospital.
Okay.
And in Cincinnati. And the last mission that we did had the team from the Vatican Hospital, Bambino Gesù, a team of pediatric surgeons and nurses. Met up in Dar es Salaam with the head of pediatric cardiology from Cedars-Sinai, who did all the interventions. We've had teams from Munich. We've had teams from India. We have a surgeon from Armenia that goes to us for Honduras because in Armenia, they actually have excellent orthopedic care. And so this is an excellent orthopedic surgeon, and he volunteers his time with us, and he goes to Honduras for us.
Do I just think of it as LA-based then?
LA? We're LA-based, but we're U.S. wide in terms of our medical support from our teams.
Mm-hmm. So as I think of my friend Dorothy, who goes on these, who's not a doctor, there is this need for volunteers to be kind of the support. Yeah. So Jill, talk about that, how others can get involved. If you're not a doctor, but this is speaking to you, you're thinking, I'd like to be a part of this. I'd like to go on a mission. I'd like to even host a child, sponsor a child in my home. Talk about the ways people can get involved.
Sure. Well, money is always welcome. I laugh and giggle about that. But, you know, the bottom line is that it does take funds to mobilize these teams to go and help and do that. So we are always, always, always fundraising in terms of, you know, even if it's just, you know, $20 here. Or $40 there.
Yeah,
if
our
you
monthly
have more
donorships.
To give, great. Or what?
Our monthly donorships are what help us keep the ship stable.
Okay.
Right.
But volunteering, go ahead.
Volunteering. For instance, like I said, I was on one mission. And so hopefully I have many more in my future. But when we were there, we, for instance, you know, all the kids that are waiting in the halls with their parents, we took little toys to help entertain them. Like, and this is something that I'm just starting from like the bottom up, so to speak, with my little kids. You think, little kids don't really, you can get little kids involved in volunteering with organizations like this, even on the hometown missions. I know that one of our young ambassadors, Marcelo Reyes from ABC's Modern Family. He's the little star on ABC's. He was one of our ambassadors at the hometown mission, and he would go and help entertain the kids and, you know, sort of entertain the kids while they were waiting to see the doctors. The non-medical volunteers in Armenia, I will say they did get to see some of the surgeries at times. I did not sit in on that because I had my young children, and I think it just would have been too much. But they are doing the paperwork. They are doing the organizational back end of it.
Yeah, we get histories from the parents and the families. So they do a lot of the backstories for us. They do the documenting. We have them take photographs. child life services, comforting the parents, because the parents are sometimes are a total mess when their child is in surgery.
I'd be
you need somebody there.
Yeah.
And I think an anesthesiologist told us that it takes a lot less pain medication if a child is calm and happy going into a procedure and calm and distracted coming out of a procedure. So those are all sort of natural things, you know, doing arts and crafts.
That's why I see Dorothy Lucy with the lollipops.
Correct.
And
after,
the children.
After the procedure.
The lollipop is after.
Yes.
Well, I'll also say that the non-medical volunteers do bring skill sets. So, for example, Jill has a social media background, a media background, and so she has contacts in that world. She has the ability to raise awareness, and that's the other part of fundraising is awareness. So you have to spread the word. We are Mending Kids. We're
welcome
going
to
all
the
over.
Olympic and Bundy podcast.
Yes,
exactly.
Correct.
Raise awareness.
So
right.
Yes.
So
that's and that's what our volunteers bring. Dorothy Lucy is another example of a person with a skill set. She's not just going on these missions and passing out candy or whatever.
No,
she's literally doing work ahead of time to raise awareness, fundraising, and this is where it really shines. So,
yeah. It's word of mouth. Mm-hmm. We're tiny but mighty.
Mm-hmm. Are there paid positions, paid people who go, or is it largely volunteer?
Well, we're a staff of four at Mending Kids, and everything else is a volunteer support. So we have some volunteers that lead the missions that have been on enough missions as volunteers that we now entrust them to go and be the coordinators on site for our doctors and that who our doctors trust. And so there's an evolution of the volunteer there that starts maybe, at the beginning taking photographs. Afterwards, you're in charge of all the medical paperwork that's going to be coming home and making sure that all our ducks are in a row, because we have to report this, right? We have foundations. We have to keep we have to report on the procedures that have been done, mm-hmm. The recovery. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of different skills that people do.
Do you know why I do a podcast? You know, being a news anchor, I do a podcast to see the good things that are happening on this planet and to give them a longer form format.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And I just really love your whole model and what you do. My mother was a nurse in the Peace Corps in Brazil. So, I guess it speaks to my heart a little bit, gets back to the roots a little bit. Let's go ahead and bring in Stephanie back in. So, Stephanie, as somebody who's been through a Mending Kids surgery, when you met the team... this is not your normal doctor, right? Somebody new, somebody strange. How was that?
It was really welcoming. I know Mending Kids actually set up everything. Like, I didn't really have to call a doctor and be like, oh, when's my appointment? They would text me or send me or call me, informing me, like, this is your appointment, this date. And I think they gave me my surgery date 2 months prior or a month prior, I believe. So I already knew everything that was going to go on. They introduced me to the doctor. I met him. He's an ENT at Cedars-Sinai. And I have an appointment, I believe, with him tomorrow to catch up with my second appointment after post-op.
Did you have any concerns or, you know, this is...
My parents had a lot of concerns about it.
As well they should. That's their job.
They did. Okay. And they still do. Uh-huh. I mean, aftercare was... They kept calling, checking up if I was okay after, I guess, like 3 days. And I can also call them asking if I had any questions about my post-op. And I actually called them, like, I think multiple times regarding my mom's questions that she had a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you hadn't had Mending Kids, where would you be?
I think I would have paid it out of pocket. Mm-hmm. Out of pocket.
That'd be a great expense for anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody wants a bill like that, right? Yeah. $5,000 and $10,000. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Can I just say one other thing?
Even though
I think it. One of the things that I regretted after I started volunteering for Mending Kids was that I missed my opportunity to go into the medical field. And I always wished that if I had maybe been exposed to it in high school, because I didn't have doctors who were parents. I had no, I didn't know that I was going to love this so much with a passion. I feel that we give this opportunity to teenagers to travel with us on the missions. And we have schools in Los Angeles who... take a week out of their curriculum and their students travel with us, like Guatemala. We have Muse School, 10 students
That's
and their
great.
Teacher for the fourth year coming with us. And this is not a science school. And every year, that class, there's one or two who decide to go into some form of global health, whether it's to become a doctor or go into social justice. Mm-hmm. And I really like that we're able to offer that to a student population.
I didn't know that was part of it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You learn something new in a podcast.
Yeah.
Yes, you do.
And then, you didn't know that?
Yeah, no! We have
D Toledo High is traveling with us in November to Tanzania on a colorectal mission. There's three students and the teacher. We have 10 students and a teacher going with us to Guatemala. Mm-hmm. And again, these are teenagers. They're not going to be operating. They're going to be doing playing soccer, doing paperwork, blogging. Yes, mm-hmm. some will observe if they feel they can do that.
But and then another chapter of what you all do, and this is what I know from the people that I know that are part of Mending Kids, is being a host family. So if you want to take the mic there, Jill, too, I'm sure you can talk on this. The host family is another way to be a part of it without maybe going on a mission.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So
I would like to defer to Isabel for this one because I frankly, all I have seen, just like you, I have seen Dorothy's chronicling of hosting.
And Brooke.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the little girl that I can't remember her name, but I've seen it, but I have not personally experienced it. And I don't know
Dorothy
much about it.
Sandra from
yes, Sandra.
El
Salvador. Sandra.
Gorgeous. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right? I know that was hard for her to give her up, right?
Yes. It's hard. It's hard. But, you know, it's a huge service for us because these are kids that are coming from the developing world, right? And they're coming with often without their parents.
Yes.
And so our host families become their parents for the time they're here for surgery.
So
it could be anywhere from 3 weeks. Sometimes it's been upwards of 6 months. Mm-hmm. In the case of one boy from Ethiopia, it was almost 2 years. And so now, it's a huge, you know.
Here's a question. So that surgery couldn't have been done where they, in their home country, like you
absolutely
go to Ethiopia?
Not.
No. So that's one of those surgeries where they needed to come here for it.
Yes. And then in this case, he required, I think, maybe 8 surgeries. So to reconstruct his hands. Mm-hmm. And so it was a long period, right? You have the surgery, you recover, schedule the next surgery, you recover. Mm-hmm. And so we work with Shriners, and so we bring international cases, and they usually are going to be operated at Shriners. And so we find a host family that will take mm-hmm. them on.
So basically you're coordinating with their medical care in their home country. Am I right, doctor?
Yes.
And then the thought is you're going to put this child on a plane. I guess they come on their own.
Well, we work with American Airlines also, and they have airline ambassadors. And so they have a special attendant who comes with a child, travels a child to us. We're at the airport waiting for them with a host family. And then that host family acts like their family. So when they're having surgery, they're the ones that are signing the consent forms. They're the ones that are there in recovery. They're the ones that bring them back to their appointments.
Mm-hmm. Wow, what a generous way to be a part of what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, it's a good way to expose you know, young children to a child who might be in some form of discomfort. And mm-hmm. it's sort of very organic way of, I don't know, introducing them to maybe compassion.
And yet it's, you know, I do a lot of foster care and adoption work. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily long term. So let's say, you know, I could be a host family for 3 months. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how it works.
Yeah. Pretty much. Wow. I'll give you the application.
She has it in her bag.
How surprising. So how many host families do you have, say, in the LA area?
Well, oh my gosh, I wouldn't know. I think we probably have a couple of dozen. Mm-hmm. They can't always do it, right? And so we also like to introduce that opportunity to new families. We have a young girl who's going to be coming from Iraq in a couple of months, and we're looking for a host family for her. But she's little, so she's traveling with her mom.
Okay.
So we're going to need a host family for her. We have on our waiting list, some kids are in the process of getting approved, but sometimes the delay is because we haven't found a host family for them to host them while we're here. So if there's anybody out there who's interested.
Someone who has the time mm-hmm. to, perhaps in the day, to take a child to their appointments, that's necessary, right?
Yeah, and uh-huh. also take the time to be at the hospital with them when they do go through the procedures.
Aww. You know? And then the language barrier, too, though, has got to be something
not
to overcome.
Not for children. Children overcome that. You know, yeah. it's more of a hang-up for the adults. But at the end of the day, children are adaptable. They're resilient. And everybody figures it out. And when you talk about little kids on missions, one of the hidden gems of having a little child on a mission, and I can't speak to your children, but I can speak to my daughter who I took when she was 8 years old to Ethiopia because nobody would watch her here at home. So I had to take her with me.
Yes, you're going.
She was playing tag and coloring with the little kids that were waiting for surgery, and she became kind of an ambassador. They were more trusting of us because she was there. She didn't seem to have a problem with us.
Right. Oh, how sweet.
You know, so, I mean, I'm not saying I want eight-year-olds on missions. No, not necessarily. But, you know, there's a value in everybody has a value on a mission.
Well, I remember Sandra had come from El Salvador, right? Just adorable. I mean, everybody who met her fell in love with her.
So sweet.
But I asked her, I said, well, do you want to stay here now? Because she was staying at a home in Malibu. And I'm like, do you want to stay here? And she says, no, I want to go home.
Oh, mm-hmm.
I want to go home. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that, of course she does. Her mother's home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So she, but she, all the kids I've met too, Doctor, are so happy.
Yeah.
They have like a light in their eyes that it's just so special.
Very resilient, I think, overall. Kids in general. That's why I work on kids a lot, because they're actually very resilient. They bounce back very easily, especially from developing countries. There's another level of resiliency, I guess you could call it, or the ability to overcome any obstacle kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that fear of traveling to another country to get that surgery done, somebody's going to put a needle in you or cut your skin, mm-hmm. that they overcome that a lot better than, I don't know,
we've seen, no, but you know, there's an interesting case to be done about pain management and pain study, which mm-hmm. is a big topic in our country. Mm-hmm. But I remember being in Mozambique and our doctor examining a child who had clearly an open wound, infected bone, ligaments that were exposed. He had a little, like, you know, a flip phone that he was pushing buttons on and just wincing when they were prodding in that thing. I know my son would have passed out. Mm-hmm. There would have been a lot of tears and mm-hmm. drama and screams. Yeah. And this child was wincing. Yeah. So, you know, pain management and pain delivery management is a completely different topic, and mm-hmm. I'm fascinated by it.
But Jill, am I right, as a mom yourself, when you see some of these kids, because I've been to your gala before, mm-hmm. and I've seen some of the kids you've honored that have, you know, been there, and just there's just a light about them.
There is, and I don't know how to describe it in a different way that, you know, was just already talked about. There is, I feel maybe that they've already been through so much, and they, you know, even though they are so young, have learned to cope with so much, and then how can we say it? The light still shines within because they've been forced to deal with an adult situation as a child, mm-hmm. but they continue to have that hope and that resiliency and that, you know, that happiness for life. And I think they appreciate certain things on a much maybe more deeper level.
And I want to just talk about this one case that we had, which was a young girl. This was before my mm-hmm. time, but she came here for a cardiac procedure, and mm-hmm. she spent a month with a host family. And while she was here, she learned English. When she recovered, she went home. She was the first member of her family to graduate from high school, and she went on to college, and then she became an attorney. And a lot of it was she was exposed to things that gave her an ambition that she had no perspective on from where she lived. Mm-hmm. And so it's not to say, hey, you're going to go back and you're going to do this. But when you say, why are you helping these kids? I mean, we're helping these kids, obviously, because they deserve to be helped. But the potential, we're planting these seeds. And, you know, you never know. You could be a child in Mongolia who then becomes an ambassador and is more tolerant of us as Americans because they know the good that we can do.
Yeah. Doc, can I get you another water?
I think I might need.
Yeah, help yourself.
I've been operating all day, so
you got to hydrate. It's hot out there today.
I literally came in from the opera.
That's okay. Yes, you're dressed. It. People can only see you're dressed and you wore the proper uniform. Go ahead and grab the mic here. So here's my question, because I do think there's so much more to it besides the medical care. It's the emotional care and what you're planting in the thoughts of young people by helping. I mean, who amongst us isn't grateful when somebody helps us? So what you're planting for them is so much more than I think just the medical repair. And Isabel?
I agree, and it's complex, right? Because we can't go there and help people and then demand that they be grateful, right? Mm-hmm. The act of doing it, that's all. That's all we need to do. If somebody takes that and then translates that into some harvesting of potential
I live by the theory that we all touch a life somewhere, somehow. It could be just your neighbor, could be your grandmother. You don't always have to help on a grand scale. That I think we all can make a difference with even just a smile as you're walking past somebody on the sidewalk. So, Stephanie, I'm wondering what you took out of all of this experience.
Well, I feel like, ever since I was young, I've been wanting to help kids somehow, and I hear that we can volunteer, so I'm trying to, spare time out of, school and go and volunteer, because I do, feel like how they were talking about, foreign countries, there is kids that do, suffer from, other, health problems that, unfortunately, their countries can't take care of them, or their parents don't have enough money. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, mending kids will help a lot of families that can't actually afford it in foreign countries. And I actually do want to help out kids now. It's been a thing since I love little kids. So
yeah. And what do you want to do when you grow up?
Well, it's really out of the kids. I used to want to be a social worker, but now I want to be an interior designer. But I would love to help kids out in a way. I was telling my mom, I was like, I don't want to have kids of my own. I'd rather adopt kids, mm-hmm. because there is a bunch of kids in the orphanage or other systems that need help, and then.
I've got an idea. As your office is growing and you need to have an interior designer, mm-hmm. you have one right here who might have some ideas. Well, that's wonderful. And I think when you have a surgery that affects you, or you have a health matter that affects you, it affects how you feel about yourself and how you go about your day. And if you're not feeling well, it's not fun. So how has this changed you, how you feel about yourself?
A lot. It helped my self-esteem a lot. I never had low self-esteem, but it did help a lot. I used to be shy, which I still am shy, but I'm more open to things now.
She's shy?
Oh my God.
I don't think so.
Great job on this podcast.
Newsflash.
I would never have guessed that.
Yeah, very shy. I'm very quiet outside school and stuff. Yeah.
But you know what? This is something that you know about. You're speaking from the heart. You're sharing your story. So shy or not, you know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Wow. You're a great Mending Kids ambassador for sure. So have you told friends about Mending Kids?
Yes, I have. Yes. I actually told my cousin because she wants to get a cosmetic done. But I told her it's only if you have a health problem or stuff like that. I was like, that's mm-hmm. how they help. And I actually told a couple friends because they're like, how did you get it for free? Did you do something?
You had
like,
a medical condition.
Yeah.
It's not a cosmetic mission just for pure cosmetics. There has to mm-hmm. be something that allowed you to qualify.
Yeah, that did allow me to qualify. And I told my friends, I was like, well, I sent to five friends the link Mending Kids, because they're like, what's Mending Kids? And I was like, oh, look through their pages. I was like, that's what they help out kids with. I think I was looking through the pages. I remember when I looked at them, I think they were just going to go and do a mission, or they were out doing a mission. I don't remember where, but
Armenia.
That's where they were at. And I saw a lot of pictures of little kids with I don't know what cleft. The terms are. Cleft. With the lip, and then I think it was a skin care or skin stuff. I'm not sure what the terms, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's talk about what's upcoming. Next mission is what?
Our next mission is to Honduras, to San Pedro Sula for an orthopedic mission, followed by that's in October 18, thereabout.
How many missions a year?
10.
Okay.
10, about 10. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to Mwanza, Tanzania, which is on Lake Victoria in Tanzania, an hour and a half away from the Serengeti.
My dad was a teacher in Tanzania.
Mm-hmm. Wow. In the Peace Corps. I love Tanzania. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to be doing a colorectal mission there. And then we round out the year with a mission to Guatemala, where we're going to do about 70, between 75 and 100 cases over a week.
That's mom's phone. Mom! Stephanie's mom. Mom! She's getting a very important phone call. Yeah. That's okay. No worries. No mm-hmm. worries. We all have our phones with us, right? We're going to take some great pictures afterwards. Mom, it's okay. I'm just glad to hear. She's been quietly sitting here. You're fine. Okay, so I think it's neat that people can see the world with these missions, too.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. So missions are set. Doctor, what about yourself? What's next for you?
Well, I've gotten in the rhythm of going to Armenia every year these days.
That's your thing.
So that's my thing. I do. I used to go to a lot of different sites. I've gone to Haiti over and over again, and also to South America and Southeast Asia and Africa. But the it's nice to see the cultures as you go about these different continents and countries. But there's something to be said about going to the same place, meeting the same doctors over and over again, and establishing a relationship as though you are part of their medical team, and you are seeing patients and almost holding their hand as you do throughout the year. It's not just for that mission. So there's a sort of a mission building concept that goes on there. Right. And it's my goal is to make Armenia, for example, a center of excellence for that region. And it's a really interesting, geographically, they're in a very interesting position.
And why Armenia?
Well, I'm Armenian.
Oh, perfect. Perfect then.
Spoiler.
And that's the spoiler.
Yeah. No, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Though.
So, yeah. Yeah. I grew up in Glendale, California. Yeah. So that's, I think, the center of the Armenian universe these days. But so, yeah, I'm very much close to the Armenian ethnicity.
You.
It speaks to me. And I just wanted to give back to my own people in whatever way I could. And this is a really neat way to do it. And I get to practice my Armenian when I'm abroad.
Aha.
So that also helps.
Well, you know, our morning anchor, Roxy Karpetian, is Armenian, and she's a big star in the Armenian community.
Yeah, so yeah, we got to get her out on one of these missions and start promoting for Mending Kids, right?
She would love to hear about this.
And we have a hike coming up.
Yes, right. The hike is coming up this weekend.
Yes.
October 13th.
Yeah, and okay. We were looking for an event that would sort of become a signature, hopefully, for Mending Kids, and it's an up to, not necessarily 5 mile hike.
Oh, that's easy.
Not 5K, 5 mile. Uh-huh. And it's designed to symbolize the distance that most parents in the developing world walk on foot to try to gain access to surgical care on our missions. Mm-hmm. Some people walk on foot, hitchhike across the entire country to get to our missions. Mm-hmm. So more and more, as we collected those stories on various missions, even in Armenia, those the people who didn't have cars that relied on people to get them there, we just sort of wanted to do a kind of a come together, raise awareness, and help us, you know, spread the word for the work that we're doing.
So how does it work to be part of the hike? If somebody's listening to this and they're like, I could do a hike.
They can just go on our website right there and they can sign up for the hike.
Mendingkids.org.
www.mendingkids.org. And it's right there, right in, you know, front and center.
Is there a fee?
It's $35 participation fee if you're an adult, and it's $20 if you're a student. And if you're a student and if you need community service, because it's raising awareness, we are signing students in so they can log however long it takes them to do the hike.
So a simple way to partake, get your fitness in, but I think the bonding and the
camaraderie that you have. Yeah, we have doctors that are, it's sponsored by Cedars-Sinai. We have doctors that are coming from CHLA. Mm-hmm. Dr. Panosian is out of town, so he gets a pass, but he also just went to Armenia for us. And so, we have a whole community, and we're asking people that, like, if you come from a certain school, wear your school's T-shirt. If they're coming from CHLA, they're wearing their CHLA clothes. I really kind of wanted to show the diverse parts of the communities that support us.
Mm-hmm. And then where is the hike, actually?
Oh, it's at the Marvin Broad Mulholland Gateway Park. So it's basically you take Reseda, go south, and it's the back entrance to Topanga State Park. So it's at the top of Reseda.
Gotcha. That's a neat
8:00 in the morning on Sunday morning. You know, plenty of time to go home, shower, and go see a football game.
I think I've done your hike before.
No, it's our first hike.
No.
You've hiked with Dorothy.
I've hiked with Dorothy? Okay.
You've hiked with
Dorothy. Yeah. Well, that
was for fun. That's
no, but you had a gala in...
Oh, we had our come home gala that was in Malibu. Mm. The tea party? Is that what you're talking about?
I thought I went to one that was kind of in the country. Not the country, but
yeah,
country
it was.
I know which one you're talking about. Yeah. We couldn't go to that one, but the pictures were.
Yeah,
I saw you in that picture with Dorothy. Actually, it was.
Yeah. It involved wine. Yes. Not hiking.
That well, with if it's with Dorothy, it involves wine.
She saves children one glass of wine at
a time. Yes, she does. That is
or one lollipop at a time, yes. Depending on the day.
Right. All right. And then, Jill, you have the gala in February.
Yes, the gala. I just found out I'm on the gala committee again.
Surprise.
What happens?
I'm delighted. I'm delighted, actually. Although thinking about February, it's like, wow, that's going to be here before we know it. February 8th, Saturday night at Skirball Center. That's going to be our big gala.
And it's our 15th year, so we're doing quinceañera. Mm-hmm.
Oh, great, great, great. Love it.
And one thing about the gala, I got to say this. The last year's gala was the first time that I had been to a gala, and we brought to our table many people that were not familiar with Mending Kids at all. And each one of them that was sitting there came up to me separately and said, I had no idea this was as incredible as it is. Yeah. And I say, I know I talked to you about it before, but they were really moved by the speeches that were made, by the people that showed up who have had the genuine long time support. And they were really, they said, thank you for telling me. I go, well, thank you for coming. And it was like, you know, it's something to go to as a great introduction.
Yeah.
So mark it on your calendars, February 8th.
Well, I think your organization just gives great hope on the planet that, you know, you're really making a difference. And that's a neat thing to see.
You know what? Our doctors are amazing. The medical volunteers who give up their time, they give up their practices. They put their practice on hold, not only for all the lead up to the mission, but, mm-hmm. you know, 2 weeks of their lives, mm-hmm. right? That could be billing and making, you know, paying for their mortgage. They put it on hold and they volunteer their time because they don't always get, like, at least nurses don't always get that as a paid lead. They take their vacation time and...
He uses his vacation mm-hmm. time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But I always tell, and Stephanie, this can be a little nugget for you. I always tell people the easiest way to give back is to do what you already do. Do what you already know how to do, what your expertise is, and just give it away for a little bit. And that's what you're doing. So, Steph, we're expecting big things from you now.
Yep, you guys are. I mean, I think it was Christine who called me about this, and I said, well, I told my mom I have to go. It's not like it's not a mandatory thing, but it's like I want to go because they helped me out, and that's the way I show them gratitude.
Well, you're a great ambassador.
Yeah. Thank
you. All right, so Dr. Andre Panosian, his wife Jill Simonian, and from Mending Kids, Isabel Fox and Stephanie Jacinto, thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having us.
Empowered.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. You can find this podcast wherever you find your podcasts. Feel free to subscribe and support. We appreciate you. I'm Christine Devine.